Coming up on Connected to Chicago, Sunday morning at 8, we'll handicap the presidential election with Rick Pearson of the Tribune and Greg Hines of Cranes on the Big 89, the Weekend WLS.
Here's your WLS weekend forecast. Partly cloudy the rest of the afternoon. Temperatures working their way up into the mid-50s with the wind blowing 20 to 30 miles an hour. It'll keep blowing like that through the evening. We have partly cloudy skies and a low of 46. And tomorrow, the wind could gust up to 40 miles an hour under partly cloudy skies. And temperatures, again, working their way back into the 50s. We'll be down around freezing tomorrow night. A windy weekend in the Windy City. 49 now all over Chicagoland. I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening to the Weekend WLS. Let me introduce Jim Oliphant to you. He is the national correspondent for the Chicago Tribune, and I've talked to him several times over the course of the last couple of months as this campaign has rolled along, as he's been following Barack Obama on the campaign trail. Although today I understand that you're in Columbus, Ohio, Jim, and he's not.
No, Michelle Obama was here yesterday, Paul, though.
Oh, okay.
And this is a... This is a state that's being very hotly contested between both camps, and both campaigns believe they have a real shot here.
I'm curious about one thing from a reporter's perspective. Since you are out there with this campaign day after day, week in, week out, and have been doing it for months, how different is an average day from another average day on the campaign?
They're not very different at all, Paul, as a matter of fact. You know, I could probably recite Obama's stump speech by heart if you pressed me.
Yeah, I bet you could.
You know, you hear a lot of the same themes, and frankly, it's orchestrated that way. It's part of sort of what people say is Obama's greatest strength, and that is message discipline. He is somebody who just does not stray from the strategy, and I think one of the things we've seen over the last month or so is that he's benefited from that, as John McCain seems to have shifted from one line of attack to another, from one sort of personality to another. Obama's steadiness seems to have become an asset for him.
Whenever I see clips of McCain rallies these days, it seems like he is making Obama the central part of many of his stump speeches. At least those are the clips that the news networks are deciding to use. When you're out there with Obama, he obviously is going on the attack about McCain's connections to Bush, but how much of a negative aspect of his speech do you hear day in and day out?
I really wouldn't say it's about John McCain. I mean, one thing Obama likes to say is that McCain loves to talk about him, but that McCain never wants to talk about the issue. So, in a sense, that this has become a race. That's about Obama from both sides. It's Barack Obama talking about his policies and plans. It's John McCain talking about Barack Obama's policies and plans. And unfortunately for McCain, when he's not talking about that, he's finding himself defending Sarah Palin. So between all of that, it's been very hard for a sort of McCain-centered message to get out there, if you know what I mean.
What kind of impact did Colin Powell's endorsement of Obama last Sunday in Meet the Press have on the campaign?
I really think it did a lot to sort of answer that central question in some voters' minds about whether, Obama has the judgment and the sort of leadership skill to steward the country through times of crises. I mean, we see now that McCain is really hammering away at that. And frankly, that it made it that much harder when you have someone like General Powell standing up and saying, I believe in Barack Obama and he's good enough for me.
And yet McCain and Palin have both been talking about this Joe Biden quote of several days ago, where he talked about how when he's president, Obama will be tested by our enemies in the first 6 months. And McCain has been talking about, well, you know what? He's untested. I'm tested. How has Obama countered that?
Well, I think Joe Biden, in fact, was in Virginia today talking about that. And it really is a situation where, you can go back and say, well, you compare judgment on Iraq and Afghanistan and the surge, or like Biden was saying today, let's talk about the economy. Let's not talk about these hypotheticals. Biden will tell you what he was really saying is that all presidents get tested. George W. Bush was certainly tested in the early days of his presidency. And so it's a situation where, you know, from the Obama point of view, they see all this stuff as a diversionary tactic to keep from talking about the economy. Well, and that's what they're going to keep hammering away at. They're going to, you know, the Obama camp, it's sort of like Bill Clinton back in 92, you know. It's the economy, stupid, and you're not going to hear anything out of them other than that for the next 10 days.
Well, then they should really tell Joe Biden that, shouldn't they?
Well, you know, that's the thing about Joe Biden, right? You know, you can tell him what you want to, and he's going to say what he says. So that is part and parcel with Biden. Obama knew that. It doesn't seem to have been a factor. I mean, if you look at sort of the polling data about Biden, especially when Biden is compared to Sarah Palin, there doesn't seem to be – voters don't seem to have a problem with Biden's experience or his judgment or sometimes if he occasionally deviates from the Obama message, where Palin, of course, we're seeing a tremendous rise in her negative numbers.
It's the Big 89 WLS. I'm Paul Harris talking with Jim Oliphant, who's a national correspondent for the Chicago Tribune, who's been covering the Obama campaign, although you didn't get to go on the plane to Hawaii.
I did not, no. You know, it's funny. I spent lots of time, though, in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, so, you know, I got the glory duty.
Did his 24 hours off the campaign trail, suspending the campaign to go see his ailing grandmother, have any impact?
I don't think so, except that maybe, you know, I mean, if it, I suppose you can, I mean, this isn't certainly like, I mean, I'm not going to be cynical enough to say that this was any kind of a tactic. You know, I'll leave that to somebody else. But, you know, when McCain did that, he made a big show of going to Washington and trying to sort of put his hands in the bailout crisis. And we sort of saw how that turned out. I don't think, you know, we're at a stage now, Paul, where and this is what's really difficult for the McCain campaign. We're on course here. There's a narrative that's being built, and what John McCain is trying to do every day is disrupt that storyline with something new, some sort of curveball, and it's getting late in the game. And you know, Obama is sort of in a position. He's a football team with a big lead, and what you're not going to do is you're not going to throw deep down the field. You're going to play ball control, and that's what Obama's doing.
You know, Jim, when you and I talked, oh, it was either in late August or maybe right around Labor Day. I wondered whether the gas prices would continue to play a role in this campaign. And I just checked.
Sure. Sounds kind of quaint now.
Yeah, you know, I just looked at the ChicagoGasPrices.com website. The average price in Chicagoland is at $3.08 a gallon. That's down 96 cents from a month ago. Gas prices have come down 25% in a month. It's still higher than it was this time last year. But you remember how in the spring and the summer, this was the story in America.
Absolutely.
And now you don't hear the campaigns talking about it at all.
Well, you know why, Paul? Because what has come down 25%? You know, your 401k.
That's right.
You know what I'm talking about? I mean, in other words, there have, you know, it would be sort of nice to sort of go back to the days of worrying about how filling up your SUV. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the game has changed a little bit in the last, especially in the last month or month and a half. I mean, we've really seen an earthquake or, you know, people compare it to the 9/11 for the financial sector. And so when that's totally altered, not only, I mean, it's altered the shape of the race. It's sort of altered the dynamic, the fabric of the country.
Absolutely.
You know, and so in a way, it's washed over every other issue. I mean, we're not, you know, and that again has not helped McCain, because energy was another big part of his campaign. One of the reasons he picked Palin was this idea of energy independence and drill, baby, drill, and everyone being focused on oil. And you know, it's like the guy can't catch a break.
It has been remarkable how events have overtaken him, and it'll be interesting to watch for the next 10 days whether anything else can come along and knock the Obama campaign off stride, and whether McCain can latch on to one single message. That seems to me, from Republicans who I talk to, that seems to be their biggest complaint, that this has been a campaign that all year long has lurched from one thing to another, desperately trying to find one thing that will stick with the American electorate.
No, and I think that's right. And you know, I think you have to give the average voter some credit for figuring that out. I mean, to the extent that they have been keeping an eye on McCain, you know, you can't tell from one week to the next, is he talking about, you know, William Ayers, you know, foreign policy, Joe the plumber, socialism. I mean, it's, you know, then you know, he'll flip a switch and he'll be the bipartisan guy who can work across the aisle and who's never been afraid to take on his own party. You know what I mean? And so who is he? I mean, that, you know, I've had some people say to me, you know, maybe another definition of a maverick is somebody who doesn't believe in anything. And, you know, because it's very hard now to know, to say, well, what does John McCain believe in? We all know he has a very compelling biography. We all know that the guy has served his country well. But who is he? You know, that is the question, ironically, that he's been trying to get voters to ask of Barack Obama. Who is this guy? But, you know, you start saying, well, if you see this pattern of shifting tactics constantly, and what happens is you begin to lose the ability to get the fix on the candidate. You know, you say, well, what's McCain saying? What is he saying this week? What was he saying last week? And, you know, I think that's what – I think voters have found that disconcerting, especially given the cratering economy.
Yeah. You know, you talked about McCain's resume. It occurred to me this morning as I was looking at a bunch of things about these two guys, a light bulb went off over my head that this is the last chance of the Vietnam generation. You know, Bill Clinton and George Bush had their ties to Vietnam, even though they never went. John McCain, of course, went and famously spent 5.5 years at the Hanoi Hilton as a prisoner. But sure, we're now moving into the post-Vietnam and I guess the post-baby boomer age. I mean, if McCain doesn't win, that's pretty much it for that generation. Obama represents a new generation, and if he wins, whoever will challenge him in 2012 or 2016 will certainly be a post-baby boomer politician, right?
That's correct. I mean, and one of the things, you know, there's going to be, if Obama does hold out and win, and especially if he wins like some people think he will, and I'm not ready to say that yet, but one of the stories that's going to be written is was this a generational event? In other words, was this a candidate perfectly suited for the time? And not just in terms of his outlook, but the ability of the people that he decided to put around him who were able to sort of mobilize the internet, mobilize these pockets of voters, you know, use, you know, the ground game and sort of these sort of amazing revenue collecting strategies, these small donors. You know, what they're doing is they're writing a new playbook for probably, you know, the 21st century, something that maybe Howard Dean started to do a few years ago. But, I mean, the Obama people have really put the finishing touch on it. So, you know, it's not that we're just seeing a new candidate. We're seeing a new kind of campaign for our age.
I hope we don't end up with David Axelrod as an annoying political pundit on CNN like James Carville.
You want me to take bets on that?
Unless he shaves his head, well, that's a whole other story for another day.
I mean, success breeds what does success breed? It breeds mainly, I think, a lot of cable television appearances.
Yeah, so. You're absolutely right. I hear that the Obama campaign is planning a big election night blowout in Grant Park. Is that right?
That's right. And I think, and you know, you may follow this closer than I. There's some issues about who's going to pay for what, and you know, he's got to be careful right now because one thing the McCain camp love to pounce on, it's him being presumptuous. You know, there's that line about measuring the drapes and all of that.
Yep.
You know, it's another line of attack. So I don't think you're going to see anything out of him. You know, they sort of have to do this logistically. You have to have a plan, just like you have to have a transition team, regardless of whether you're going to win or lose. That stuff has to be in place. So, you know, they're doing the logistical thing. But certainly no one, you're never going to get anybody on the Obama side to say this thing is over.
Yeah.
You know, until literally it's called on election night.
And by the way, speaking of transition teams, I talked to a Democratic insider earlier this week who told me that they're very proud of the people who are already working on a transition. And I said, well, doesn't McCain have people doing that? And he said, yeah, but they're not as good at it as we are. And I said, well, what's the difference? He said, because just like in the campaign, we've got this discipline. We're not accepting the fact that we're going to win, and so we have to do the transition. Any presidential campaign 10 days before Election Day has to be thinking about what you're going to do starting on the day after Election Day. And the McCain-Palin people are certainly doing that. But we're better at it because we've done it before. And I said, well, wow, that's a huge statement to make. I didn't talk to anybody who's inside the McCain campaign about it. They don't want to talk about a transition. They, I think, are spending every waking minute trying to figure out how do we turn this cruise ship around in the last 10 days.
No, I think that's right. And I think it's also true. that the McCain people have less of a blueprint for the transition than the Obama people. One of the reasons, and this is something that's been touched on very often, is that if John McCain were to win, he would actually have some trouble filling a lot of spots in his administration. I mean, a lot of talented Republicans have been exhausted by the 8 years of the Bush administration and everything that they've had to deal with. And so if John McCain were to somehow, you know, strike light or put lightning in a bottle and win this thing, not only would he be facing a solidly Democratic Congress, it looks like, but I think he would also have to recruit some Democrats, independents, all kinds of people to come and help with his effort, because, frankly, the bench is a little thin for him.
Yeah. It is really a remarkable change in the guard, regardless of who wins and what happens on November 4th and the morning of November 5th. You know, this is the first election that if McCain wins this thing, it will be the first election the Republicans have won without a Bush or a Nixon on the ticket in 80 years. Herbert Hoover.
Amazing?
Herbert Hoover was the last one to win without a Nixon or a Bush, either in the first or second slot on the ticket, in 1928. And the Democrats,
exactly,
of course...
Which is not exactly the name you want associated with your candidacy right now, Herbert Hoover.
No, absolutely not. And the Democrats, of course, they've had the 8 years of Bill Clinton and the 4 years of Jimmy Carter. And for them, you know, that's 2 in 40 years.
Right. So, no, I mean, you know, it's another sort of... I mean, the generational script is being rewritten over, you know, before our eyes. And as you said, the people who come after... I mean, John McCain, in a way, is like Bob Dole in that... He represents sort of, the last, as you mentioned, the last representative of a certain generation. I have no doubt that if he doesn't win, the next Republican nominee, regardless whether it's, you know, Sarah Palin or whoever, will be somebody different. The party will have a different look. It'll have a different message. And I think you're actually seeing that play out right now, whether it's going to go, you know, if it's really going to be about this Karl Rove sort of strong appeal to the evangelicals, or is it going to be sort of a new coalition of sort of smart growth, low tax, you know, maybe a little more moderate on the social issues. I think you're really going to see the Republican Party try to figure out what it really stands for if it doesn't pull this one off.
Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure, Paul.
Happy weekend. You too. Jim Oliphant, live from the campaign trail in Columbus, Ohio. He's national correspondent for the Chicago Tribune here on the Big 89 WLS.